duaya yardımcısı.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا وعظيمنا وحبيب قلوبنا وشفيع نفوسنا أبي القاسم محمد اللهم صل على محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين وأصحابه الغر الميامين. الحمد لله الذي جعلنا من المتمسكين بولاية سيدي ومولاي علي بن أبي طالب. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. أما بعد، يقول الله في كتابه الكريم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: ونريد أن نمن على الذين استضعفوا في الأرض ونجعلهم أئمة ونجعلهم الوارثين. The first of our last salawat in honor of Rasulullah Muhammad صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم. اللهم صل على محمد. The second in honor of Amir al-Mu'minin Ali ibn Abi Talib. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد. The third with your loudest voices, in honor of the Imam of our time, Imam Sahib al-Asr wal-Zaman. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Respected scholars, brothers and sisters, salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. The discussion concerning the misconceptions surrounding the existence of Imam al-Mahdi, ajjalallah farajahu al-sharif. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Is one of the most intriguing discussions in Islamic thought today, and a discussion that can be approached from a variety of angles. For it is a discussion which definitely has theological repercussions, which affect the lives of millions of Muslims in the world today. A discussion from which many lessons may be learnt, and indeed many examples may be derived, and without a doubt a discussion of historical as well as contemporary significance in our lives today. Each and every Muslim in the world today believes in the Mahdi. Each and every Muslim in the world today strives to be amongst the army of the Mahdi. There isn't a single Muslim in the world today who doubts the importance of the Mahdi at the end of time. As in, irrespective of which school of Islam you belong to, every Muslim believes in the Mahdi. Every Muslim believes in the role of the Mahdi to destroy the forces of the Dajjal and to instill justice in the world and remove all forms of tyranny. As in, if you were to read the literature of every school within the religion of Islam, you'll find that every school in the religion of Islam stresses on the role of the Mahdi at the end of time. If you go to our brothers in Ahl Sunnah and you come to our lectures, you'll find that all of us stress on the importance of the belief in the Mahdi, to the extent that the famous scholar of Saudi Arabia, Ibn Baz, over 30 years ago now, had said that it is incumbent on every Muslim to believe in the Mahdi, and whoever does not believe in the Mahdi is outside of the fold of the religion of Islam. Because of the number of reports that we have in our literature about the Mahdi, it is obligatory for every Muslim to believe in the Mahdi. As you know, when reports in hadith literature reach a level known as tawatur, where they are narrated often from so many different angles, you find that they become, that particular concept becomes incumbent on every Muslim. In other words, a common denominator between every Muslim in the world today is Imam al-Mahdi. However, there is of course a slight difference between us and other schools in Islam concerning the Imam. We of course believe that the Imam is already born and alive and amongst us. Whereas the other schools say, no, the Mahdi is still not yet born, but that he will be born and that he has exactly the same role that we envisage. As in, we in the school of Ahlul Bayt envisage that the Imam has the role of instilling justice. Our brothers in Ahlul Sunnah believe the same. We believe that the Imam has the role of instilling Allah's government on earth. Our brothers in Ahlul Sunnah believe the same. We believe that the Imam is from the sons of Fatima al-Zahra, salawatullah wa salamuhu alayha. We believe in the same. But the difference is that our brothers say he is of the sons to be born, whereas we are of the belief that he is already born. Therefore, you find that there is a great common denominator between us and our brothers when it comes to the Mahdi. Every Muslim in the world believes in Imam Mahdi. But our brothers in Ahlul Sunnah say that Imam al-Mahdi is not yet born. Whereas we believe that no, Imam al-Mahdi is the son of Imam al-Askari, and that he was already born, and that he is amongst us today. The sadness is that when other Muslims refer to our belief in the Imam, instead of discussing it academically, you find many who mock our belief. Many who make fun of our belief. At the end of the day, all of us are Muslims when we believe in the Mahdi. There is no need to make fun of our belief in the Mahdi. You find, today there are certain people who are like, the Shia believe in this Mahdi, who apparently is hiding in a cave in Samarra somewhere. Would you believe? In medieval Islamic literature, they used to always say that the Shia believe in a Mahdi who is in a cave, which ironically in some of their literature they used to write, in a cave in Hilla. Imam al-Mahdi is in a cave in Hilla. As in they say that Imam al-Mahdi is in a cave or what they call a sardab. You know the sardab in Samarra? They say that Imam al-Mahdi of the Shia is in a cave somewhere and that he's hiding and that he's about 1,000 years old now and that his mother, no one could see the signs of pregnancy on her. And that the Shia actually believe that he can help them. This type of mocking is very sad. As in for someone to come and say, hey Shia, where is your Mahdi? Tell him to come out of his occultation. It's not the way you discuss an important figure, not only in our books, but in the books of all Muslims. When someone comes with a misconception about Imam al-Mahdi, it is vital that we are able to answer their misconceptions. As in today you find amongst the misconceptions, our questions surrounding his age. Some people come and say, how could you say that the Imam who you believe in is now over 1,000 years of age? This is something which is ridiculous. Some come and say, for example, how could you believe in an Imam which you can't see? An Imam has to be seen by all of the people. Allah would not create an existence who you cannot see. How can you believe in an Imam who goes into ghaibah? What's this concept of ghaibah? This is all nonsense. Some came forward and said, how could you believe in a five-year-old Imam? How could Allah give wisdom to a five-year-old? In other words, these are the common misconceptions which surround our Imam. And it is vital for us to be able to answer them. Because there's no point me raising my hands every day saying, Allahumma kun li waliyika, when I have no relationship with his wali, when I do not understand the position of his wali, when I do not know the role of his wali. You find that the hadith says, من مات ولم يعرف إمام زمانه مات ميتة جاهلية. The one who dies without knowing the Imam of his time dies a death of jahiliyyah. I ask you from my heart, brothers and sisters, if a person today came to you and said to you, how could you believe in an Imam who is over 1,000 years of age? Would you know how to answer him? If someone came and said to you, how could you believe in an Imam who is in occultation and no one can see him? Would you be able to answer them? If someone came and said to you, how can you believe in an Imam whose mother didn't look pregnant? Would you be able to answer them? What if someone came to you and said, yes, we believe in a Mahdi, but there is no such thing as a ghaibah, an occultation. This is something which the Shia formed after the Imams were living. Would you be able to reply by showing literature about the ghaibah? In other words, the issue of Imam al-Mahdi is paramount importance for every Muslim today. And it's an issue which we therefore have to dissect in depth. And I want to dissect it in a number of stages. Number one, and of the utmost importance, in the time of the Imams, was there a belief in the concept of ghaibah? Or was this a concept which was made after the Imams died? Number two, how is it that our 12th Imam's mother did not have any signs of pregnancy on her whatsoever? And that even in the books of the hadith it says that the Imam's great aunt said Narjis did not look pregnant on that night of the 15th of Sha'ban. Number three, if Imam was born on that night, how is it that for a few years, nobody was able to tell when they saw the small child walking around? Number four, how is it that Allah gives a five-year-old such wisdom to become the leader of a whole school? Number five, how is it that someone goes into ghaibah? And where does this concept of ghaibah can be seen in Islamic history? Number six, if the Imam is alive today, he would be over 1,100 years of age. How can a human being live for over 1,100 years? Number seven, what was the benefit of putting an Imam in occultation? Number eight, can we truly benefit from an Imam in occultation? And if we have, which personalities benefited from his occultation in their lifetime? Let's dissect this in order that we're able to understand this topic in complete depth. The first question that's normally put forward by Muslims outside of the school of Ahlul Bayt straight away refers to the Imam who is Ghaib, the Imam in occultation. The Muslims outside of the school of Ahlul Bayt ask us a simple question. We believe in the Mahdi, but we don't believe in a Mahdi who went into Ghaibah. They say that this concept of occultation is a concept that you made after your Imams were alive. You say, what do you mean? They say that after your Imams had passed away, you looked back at your Imams and you thought, what's the best thing we can do to make us seem like a school which holds on to the truth? So you created a myth called Ghaibah, that the Mahdi is a person who went into occultation and that you will see him at the end of time. As in, would you believe some Shia in our communities today even say this? That where did this notion of Ghaibah come from? And a Sunni Muslim believes in the Mahdi who is to be born. Where did we get the idea in our literature that there is an Imam who would be in Ghaibah? How do we reply? We reply by saying that from the times of the fifth Imam until the times of the 10th and 11th Imam, we have a number of books which are already discussing the Ghaibah of the Imam. We have a number of books in the times of the Imam which are discussing the Ghaibah of the Imam. You see, why is this point delicate? If I show you a reference about the 12th Imam's Ghaibah from Al-Kafi, Al-Kafi was written after the 12th Imam went into Ghaibah, yes? If I show you a reference about the 12th Imam's Ghaibah from the books of Sheikh Al-Saduq or the books of Sheikh Al-Tusi, these were all written after the Ghaibah. Someone could say that these authors retrospectively wrote their own history. You know, some academics, they say history is his story. What do academics say? History is his story. A person can look back and make something up. We reply by saying no. And from the time of Imam al-Baqir until the time of Imam al-Askari, we had books of literature which were already saying that the Prophet said that the Mahdi will be in occultation. What's the clearest proof of this? That you had sects of Islam who believed in the Ghaibah of the Mahdi already in the time of the Imams before Imam al-Mahdi came. Let me give you an example. There was a sect in Islam in the time of what? In the time of our seventh Imam. This sect in Islam was known as the Waqifites. Al-Waqifiyya. Waqf means to stand or to stop somewhere, yes? These people stopped at the imamate of Imam al-Kadhim, our seventh Imam. They didn't move on to the imamate of who? To the imamate of Imam al-Rada. Now there are different reasons why they didn't move on. So they believed in the first seven Imams, then they didn't move on to the eighth Imam. Amongst the reasons some give was that some of them didn't want to give their khums to the eighth Imam. They wanted to keep the khums to themselves. They had a lot of khums from the Shia. They never wanted to give it to the eighth Imam. So what did they decide to do? They decided to say that the seventh Imam went into Ghaibah and the khums remains with us. Okay. This sect, the Waqifites, in their books, in their literature, they had hadith from the Prophet talking about the Ghaibah of the awaited Mahdi. For example, within their literature, and we're talking the time of 5th, 6th, 7th Imam, within their literature, they had, for example, a scholar like Ibrahim ibn Salih al-Kufi. Ibrahim bin Salih al-Kufi had a book called Kitab al-Ghaybah. What's the book called? Kitab al-Ghaybah. Ibrahim bin Salih al-Kufi was a contemporary of our 5th Imam. Yet already in the time of the 5th Imam, there are books being written called Kitab al-Ghaybah. Likewise, another of the scholars of the Waqifites, what was his name? Another of the scholars of the Waqifites, Ali ibn Hassan. This Ali ibn Hassan, who some used to call it Tatari, this Ali ibn Hassan also had a book on the Ghaybah. His student, Hassan ibn Suma'a, also had a book on the Ghaybah. These people were all living in the time around the 6th, 7th Imam. In other words, from the time of the 6th, 7th Imam, we already have many traditions about the occultation of the 12th Imam. Because what does some non-Shia come to us and say? All your ideas about the 12th Imam being in Ghaybah is after the 12th Imam. We say, no. These are opinions of a sect who said that the Mahdi will be in Ghaybah. Unfortunately, they said the Mahdi was Imam al-Kadhim. Irrespective of who they chose as the Mahdi, within their text they had the opinion that there would be a Mahdi called, what? A Mahdi who would go into a Ghaybah. That's number one. Number two, within Zaydi literature, you know we have the Zaydi brethren in the world today, 9 million Zaydi Shia who live in the world today. They go up to Zayd, the son of Imam Zayn al-Abidin. They don't take Imam al-Baqir. So they go up to Imam Zayn al-Abidin, then his son Zayd. Within their literature, you find, for example, the Asl, which I mentioned yesterday in my lecture. From Imam al-Sadiq, there is a piece of literature that remains, which is the Asl of Abu Sa'id al-Asfari. Imam al-Sadiq, 400 people wrote his lessons. Of these 400 Asul, 13 to 16 remain. One of them is called the Asl of Abu Sa'id al-Asfari. This Asl remains with us until today. Within this Asl, it's clearly written that Rasulullah mentions that my 11 sons are whom? My 11 sons are the guides for, are the stars for the people of the earth, like the stars are a guard for the people of the heavens, and that the last of them is Al-Qa'im Al-Mahdi, Ajallallah Farajahu Sharif. Allahumma. And that the Mahdi will be in Ghaybah. In other words, you have within Waqifite literature, you have within Zaydi literature, this person, if we say he lived in the middle of the 2nd century, Imam Zamana went into Ghaybah in the middle of the 3rd century. This person lived in the middle of the 2nd century, and he has a hadith from Rasulullah saying that the Qa'im from the followers of Ahlul Bayt, he will be what? The Qa'im will be the Mahdi who will go into Ghaybah. Then we have in our own books, in our own literature, we have clear hadiths which mention that the Imam would be an Imam who would go in Ghaybah. You see, I respect my Sunni brothers. My Sunni brothers, they believe in Imam al-Mahdi, but they say we don't believe in his Ghaybah. In my books, in the Shia literature, we have literature from before Imam Zamana went into Ghaybah, which mentions that Imam Zamana would go into Ghaybah. For example, you find Ali bin Mahziyar al-Ahwazi, the great companion of Imam al-Jawad. Companion of which Imam? Imam al Jawad. Imam al-Jawad is living at least 50 years before the Ghaybah of the 12th Imam. Ali bin Mahziyar, within his two famous works, Kitab al-Malahim, and what's the other one? The other one is Kitab al-Qa'im. These are the two most famous works of Ali bin Mahziyar. You find within them he mentions all the hadiths that Imam Zaman will go into Ghaybah. From which Imam? Imam al-Jawad. In other words, this idea of Imam al-Zaman going into Ghaybah is not a Shia concoction later. From the time of Imam al-Jawad, Ali bin Mahziyar is already writing that we have traditions from the Imams of Ahlul Bayt that al-Mahdi will be from the sons of Fatimah al-Zahra, and he will go into Ghaybah. Even we have another of the works, which not much of it remains today, Hassan ibn Sarad, his work on the Ghaybah, known as the Mashyakha. And then you have al-Fadl bin Shadan. Fadl bin Shadan, who died just before the Ghaybah of the 12th Imam, you find he was writing works which were later used which show the hadith that the 12th Imam will go into Ghaybah. Therefore, someone who says that your idea of the 12th Imam going into Ghaybah is some later concoction, we reply by saying no. We have literature from our school and from other schools in Islam before he went into Ghaybah, where books were purposely called Kitab al-Ghaybah or Kitab al-Qa'im to purposely show that he would definitely go into Ghaybah. Point number two. What's point number two? Point number two is, if there is no such concept as a Mahdi, who is the son of al-Askari, who will go into Ghaybah, I ask every Muslim in the world today, why did the Abbasid Khulafa put Imam al-Hadi and Imam al-Askari under house arrest in Samarra? You tell me the Mahdi isn't born, yes? The Mahdi will be born later, yes? I ask one question. If the Mahdi wasn't going to be born, and there's no such thing as his Ghaybah, why are Imam al-Hadi and Imam al-Askari taken to Samarra and placed under house arrest by the Khulafa of Bani Abbas? Mutawakkil, Mu'tamid, Mu'taz, all of these people were Khulafa of Bani Abbas, yes? I'm a caliph. My central base was Baghdad, yes? I moved my caliphate to Samarra. May Allah bless all of you to do ziyarah in Samarra. You move your caliphate base from Baghdad to where? Samarra. Not only do you move, because Samarra is a beautiful area, the word Samarra comes from the idea of that which is pleasing to the eye. When you go to Samarra, you see rivers and trees everywhere. It's unbelievable exoticness in Samarra, which unfortunately the wars have ruined. But originally Samarra has got the most beautiful of rivers, fields of grass and trees everywhere. I, as a Khalifa, moved to Samarra. Why do I have to drag Ali al-Hadi and Hassan al-Askari to Samarra? Why? Unless I know from the extant literature that was around that there would be a son from the line of Fatima who will be born. I've looked at each son one by one and I've realized they've come to number 10 and they've come to number 11. So what do? I don't let number 10 and number 11 rest. I order them to leave their families, be they in Medina, or be their families in Baghdad, and I keep them in Samarra, so my soldiers keep an eye on their woman and whether their woman give birth to a child who is the Mahdi. You see, when someone comes and tells me, said, Ammar, I'm not sure about Imam Zamana. I said to him, why are you not sure about Imam Zaman? They say, I'm not sure about Imam Zaman because at the end of the day, some people say he wasn't born. I say, if he wasn't born, so why is the Abbasids making sure that his grandfather and father are under house arrest in Samarra? If I now know from the lineage of Rasulullah from Fatima al-Zahra that we've reached the 10th of the 12th. Remember yesterday, what was my lecture? Rasulullah said there will be 12 Khalifs after me. All of them are from Quraysh. All of them are from Bani Hashim. I, as an Abbasid Khalifa, what do? I don't want this Mahdi to run over my government. So what do? I order Imam al-Hadi to leave where he is. I order Imam al-Askari to leave where he is. And I force them to stay in Samarra with all their family. So I keep an eye on when the Mahdi is born. That's why you find Imam al-Hadi was dragged. I tell you, no Imam of Ahlul Bayt was dragged either out in the middle of the night or in the middle of the day as viciously as Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. You know what they used to do to Imam al-Hadi? Say 4 o'clock in the morning. Imam al-Hadi finishes Fajr prayers, he finishes du'as, he goes to sleep. All of a sudden, 30 soldiers enter his house, pull him out and take him to the palace. And they take him out for some petty issue where the Khalifa was confused about something. He gives them the answer, he says, okay, go back to sleep now. And they would ransack his house. Does he have any weapons? They enter, they see a prayer mat. Does he have any weapons? They enter, they see water. Does he have any weapons? They enter, they see a mattress. They would try constantly to harass the Imam. But you found Imam al-Hadi would always show them respect. If they ever needed help on an issue, they tell Imam al-Hadi, come here, we want to question you on something. I'll never forget when a lady came towards Mutawakkil, she said to him, Mutawakkil, someone came to him and said, there's a lady who claims she's Zainab. He said, which Zainab? He said, Zainab, sister of Hussein. He's like, Zainab, sister of Hussein? She died over 100 years ago, over 200 years ago, for example. She died, she passed away. The reply was, no, this lady claims she's Zainab. Mutawakkil said, come here. When the lady came, Mutawakkil looked at her and said, excuse me, who are you? She said, I'm Zainab. Which Zainab? Zainab, sister of Hussein, daughter of Ali. Mutawakkil said, Zainab, sister of Hussein, daughter of Ali, died over 150 odd years back. What are you talking about? She said, no, every night in my dream, Rasulullah sees me. And when Rasulullah sees me, he pats me on my body, I get my youth back again. Mutawakkil knows that there's only one man who can answer this lady. And it's the man he's placed under house arrest, Imam al-Hadi. He calls Imam al-Hadi and says, listen, I can't answer her. She's causing trouble for me. Can you answer her? He said, what's the issue? Excuse me, who are you? She said, I'm Zainab. Which Zainab? Zainab, sister of Hussein. Which Hussein? Hussein, son of Ali. You mean my great-great-grandfather, Hussein. And you're Zainab, my great-great-great-aunt. Yes. He said, okay, very well. Mutawakkil said, what do you mean very well? Sort something out. He said, yes, it's normal. Mutawakkil, you still have a cage of lions? He said, yes, I do. He said, let her go and sit with the lions. She said, what do you mean sit with the lions? He said, well, if you truly are Zainab, sister of Hussein, the lions will not come and attack you. Because a lion doesn't attack the son or daughter of Fatima al-Zahra. He will look after her. She looked at him, she said to him at that moment, well, if you're the great son of Fatima al-Zahra, why don't you sit with the lions? The narration says, Imam al-Hadi went into the cage, he sat with the lions. By the time they came to check on him, the lions were doing sujood next to Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. At that moment, she admitted, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa a second in honor of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Allahumma salli. A third with your loudest voices in honor of Imam al-Askari alayhi salam. In other words, these khulafa, what did they do? They would take Imam al-Hadi to Samarra. Afterwards, they would take Imam al-Askari to Samarra. And again, if they had trouble with an issue, they'd use Imam al-Askari. Imam al-Askari one day, al-Mu'tamid, the Khalifa, he had a major trouble in Samarra. What was the trouble? There was no rain coming down in Samarra at all. When there was no rain coming down, the people were praying every day. You know, there's a salah for prayer, there's salah for rain called Salat al-Istisqa. Every day they were praying and praying and praying, no rain. Suddenly a Christian priest came, he prayed, all of a sudden rain came down. Mu'tamid was in trouble. People were now saying maybe Christianity is the religion of God, maybe not Islam. Al-Mu'tamid has placed Imam al-Askari in house arrest because he knows Imam al-Askari is the 11th of the Shia Imams, which means that the Mahdi is going to be born, so I'll keep an eye on him. He brings him out, says, come here. Says, we have a trouble, we have a dilemma. I said, what is it? He said, we had no rain, and the rain started to come down because the Christian priest prayed. And the people are saying Islam is not the religion of God. Imam al-Askari said, very well. Gather the Christian priest, gather all the people, and tell the Christian priest to pray for rain again. And Mu'tamid said, what do you mean pray for rain again? It's already raining. He said, doesn't matter. If the man has the power, he'll make it rain again. But he said, on the Tuesday, when he's doing it, tell me, I'll be there. So he came on the Tuesday, the Christian priest came, again he prayed, Imam al-Askari straight away said to one of his companions, go and grab his hand as he is about to do dua. As the Christian priest is about to do dua, the companion Imam al-Askari came, grabbed his hand, he took out a small bone. He gave it to Imam al-Askari showed the people, he said, this is a bone which was in a grave of a prophet of God. This Christian has taken the bone out of the grave of the prophet, and he prays to Allah for rain in the name of that prophet. And when Allah hears a dua in the name of a prophet, Allah answers the dua straight away. So in other words, Imam al-Askari and Imam al-Hadi, what were they doing in Samarra? They were under house arrest. But if the Khalifa needed them, he would use them. However, this is the second point to prove that Imam al-Mahdi was born. What is it? Imam al-Mahdi was born, the highlighted by which area? By the fact that the Abbasid Khulafa have taken Imam al-Hadi and Imam al-Askari and have put them under house arrest in Samarra. Imagine I'm a Khalifa. There's a million Muslim scholars. If all the Muslim scholars are a threat, I would get all the Muslim scholars to Samarra. No, let the Muslim scholars stay in Medina. Let the other one stay in Kufa. Let the other one stay in Egypt. But these two have to stay in Samarra. Because I know out of all the Muslim scholars living, these two are the ones who the Mahdi will come from. And these two are the ones whose names have been told to everyone that they are the Imams of Ahlul Bayt. In other words, when someone asks you for the second proof, Say, why were Imam al-Hadi, Imam al-Askari taken under house arrest in Samarra if there was no Mahdi to be born? Number three, how could your Imam be born from a mother who had no signs of pregnancy? Because you know in our hadith books what it says. Bibi Narjis did not have the signs of pregnancy even up until the night of the 15th of Sha'ban. You know the night of the 15th of Sha'ban is holy for us and our Sunni brothers. Both of us believe it's the holiest night after the night of Qadr. Our Sunni brothers believe it's the holy night like we do because we say it's that night when all of your sins are forgiven. Like Laylatul Qadr, there are many hadiths about 15th of Sha'ban. Yes? We also believe it's the great night when the Imam was born. Yet on that night, his mother doesn't have the signs of pregnancy. In our hadith books, it says Bibi Narjis did not know she was pregnant. So our brothers say, how could you believe in an Imam whose own mother did not have the signs of pregnancy? We reply by saying what? Firstly, Allah, when He wants to do something, He says, kun fayakun. Mary was able to give birth as a virgin. If the Lord can let Mary give birth as a virgin, why can't He let Bibi Narjis give birth in this way? But secondly and more clear, I am surprised by the Muslim who says, how can a woman give birth without the signs of pregnancy when the same Muslim has read the story of Nabi Musa in the Quran? Nabi Musa in the Quran, did his mother have the signs of pregnancy or no? No, she didn't. Why? Because Fir'aun was told by the soothsayers that there will be a young boy who is born who will overtake your kingdom. He will bring peace and remove injustice. He will bring justice and remove tyranny. So what did Fir'aun, the Quran say? What did Fir'aun begin to do? Fir'aun started going to every house and they would slaughter all the newborn males. Isn't it? Isn't it in the Quran? That they would slaughter all the newborn males. So one day, Fir'aun's advisor came and said, Fir'aun, listen, we're not going to have any more servants. Because you're killing every newborn male, there's not going to be any more slaves for us. So Fir'aun said, very well, one year we're going to kill, the other year we're going to let people live. In the year he let people live, Nabi Harun was born. In the year he let the boys live, Nabi Harun was born. In the year he wanted to kill, Nabi Musa was born. Every Muslim believes Nabi Musa's mother did not have the signs of pregnancy when she gave birth to Nabi Musa. Why? Had she had the signs of pregnancy, they would have killed her and the child, isn't it? But the signs of pregnancy were hidden because Allah wanted to protect the birth of Nabi Musa. If Allah removed the signs of pregnancy to protect the birth of Nabi Musa, why Allah could not remove the signs of pregnancy to make sure that the birth of Imam Sahib al-Asr al-Zaman went ahead? It's the same correlation. The same correlation exactly, that when someone says, how is it Bibi Narjis was able to give birth without signs? Because, you know, Sayyidah Hakima, the auntie of Imam al-Askari, the sister of Imam al-Hadi, she says on the night of 15th of Sha'ban, I've been told by Imam al-Askari, come and break your fast with us. Tonight the Hujjah will be born. And I'm looking at him thinking, but there's no signs of pregnancy. I went to Narjis. Narjis came to wash my feet. I said to her, no, tonight I must wash your feet. She said to her, why? She said, you're going to give birth to the Hujjah. Bibi Narjis looked at her and said, but how can I give birth when I have no signs of pregnancy? And that's why you find it was purposely hidden. Why? Because the Abbasid soldiers surrounded the house of Imam al-Askari every day. And especially for a number of years. Sheikh al-Saduq and Sheikh al-Kulaini give two different names to the mothers of Imam al-Zaman. One says the mother of Imam al-Zaman was a Roman princess. The other says the mother of Imam al-Zaman was from North Africa. Or some say from the Sudan area. The question then is, what were the names? Some say her name was Narjis, others say her name was Saqil. Someone says, why would there be two mothers who are thought of as being mothers of the 12th Imam in the house? Because Saqil took it upon herself When the Abbasid soldiers wanted to see which lady is pregnant, Saqil took it upon herself to say, I may be the one who's pregnant, so they focus more on her than Narjis. That's sacrifice. Saqil doesn't need to sacrifice. You had Saqil, you had Narjis, there's a third lady mentioned, Sawsan. Although some believe two of them may have the same name, or one of them may have two names. Saqil and Narjis both lived in the same house. What did the Abbasid soldiers do? They focused more on Saqil and left Narjis. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala didn't let the signs of pregnancy come on Narjis until Narjis gave birth on the 15th of Sha'ban. Someone turns around and says, okay, very well. She gave birth on the 15th of Sha'ban to a newborn male, yes? A newborn male, we agree. A newborn male is born. But hold on. 12th Imam went into Ghaybah at which age? Which age? 5, yes? Ghaybah al-Sughra, 5 years of age. They can't spot him in the first 5 years walking around? Abbasid soldiers didn't see him born. His mother, the signs of pregnancy weren't clear, yes? But hold on, he's going to grow to become a 5-year-old. How did they not spot him? As soon as he was born, Imam al-Askari sent him to go and live with his grandmother in Medina. Many Shia think Imam Sahib al-Ashr al-Zaman grew up in Samarra. He didn't grow up in Samarra. There's no way he could grow up in Samarra. He'd be killed. You see a 3-4-year-old boy walking around all of a sudden. What do you think? Who is that? I put all that pressure on a house and I see a 3-4-year-old boy and I don't know who he is. Imam al-Askari sent him to go and live in Medina with his grandmother, the mother of Imam. You found that he went to go and stay with Hudayf, and then after Hudayf, they went to stay in Mecca with Ahmed ibn Muhammad ibn al-Mutahhar. They stayed up until Imam returned at the age of 5 to lead the salah of his father when his father died. Otherwise, someone will come and attack you. He'll say, okay, Imam, no one knew when he was born, but how does he get away with walking around Samarra for 5 years? How do you get away with it? You don't. Your father sends you to Medina to live there. And then you live in Mecca. Only when your father dies do you come and lead the salah of your father, because an imam has to lead the salah of another imam when he dies. Question. He led the salah. He went into ghaybah. What is this concept of going into ghaybah? Going into occultation? Because they say to us, where's your Mahdi? Let him come out of his cave. You hear that? Let him come out of his cave. Where's he hiding? Why does he come and help you? I'm surprised when a Muslim says that to another Muslim. I'm surprised a Muslim tells another Muslim, what's the stupid thing that you believe in your imam that he can't be seen, he's in ghaybah. Firstly, the sign of the muttaqeen in the Quran is that they believe in that which is unseen, isn't it? Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, alif lam mim, ذلك الكتاب لا ريب فيه هدى للمتقين الذين يؤمنون بالغيب. The Quran says those who believe in the unseen are of the muttaqeen. Allah, I saw him with my eyes, or I saw Allah with my heart? I saw Allah with my heart. Can't see Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. There are other areas in my life which I don't see with my eyes, but they exist, isn't it? Firstly, I don't have to see something for it to exist. Secondly, we have so many examples of creations of Allah who themselves are in their own ghaybah, isn't it? You ever heard of shaitan? Your Mahdi, where is he? How could he be in ghaybah? Hold on a minute, where's your shaitan? I don't see that guy. I know he definitely has an effect, but I can't see him. Quran tells me, قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ مَلِكِ النَّاسِ إِلَهِ النَّاسِ مِنْ شَرِّ الْوَسْوَاسِ. Yeah, I hear waswas, but I don't see him. You're mocking my Mahdi. I replied to you, where's your shaitan? Put shaitan aside. Where is Prophet Khidr alayhi salam? Those who believe Prophet Khidr from Ahlul Sunnah, that he's still alive. Isn't he in ghaybah? Where's Prophet Idris alayhi salam? Isn't he in ghaybah? Where's Prophet Jesus alayhi salam? Those who come and say, your Mahdi, we can't see him, he's in ghaybah. I say, where's your Jesus? And my Jesus? Don't we believe Allah rescued Prophet Isa? to protect him from those who wanted to kill him. So in the same way, Allah rescued Prophet Isa from those who wanted to kill him. Why would Allah not protect the man who's going to lead Prophet Isa in Salah? Isn't Prophet Isa going to be led in Salah by the Imam? Doesn't every book in Hadith say that when Nabi Isa will be led in Salah by Imam al-Mahdi? So if Allah can put Prophet Isa in Ghaibah because of the safety of Prophet Isa's life, why can't Allah put Imam al-Mahdi in Ghaibah for the safety of Imam al-Mahdi's life? And those who say a person can't go in Ghaibah, we reply, did not Rasulullah go on a minor Ghaibah on the night of Hijrah from Mecca to Medina? When Rasulullah said to Ali ibn Abi Talib, sleep in my bed tonight. Are you willing to sleep? And he said, Ya Rasulullah, are you at peace? He said, yes I am. He said, then my life may be sacrificed for your life. And my soul may be sacrificed for your soul. Amir al-Mu'min slept that night. Where? In the bed of Rasulullah. Rasulullah, when he left the house, there were 40 men with a sword to kill Rasulullah. How did Rasulullah leave? Everyone saw him? Or was it a case of summun bukmun umyun fahum la yubsirun? Or was it a case of وَجَعَلْنَا مِنْ بَيْنِ أَيْدِيهِمْ سَدًّا وَمِنْ خَلْفِهِمْ سَدًّا فَأَخْشَيْنَاهُمْ فَهُمْ لَا يُبْصِرُونَ? Those who come and tell me this Mahdi of yours is in Ghaibah, what is this myth of Ghaibah? I reply, Khidr, Ghaibah. Jesus, Ghaibah. Idris, Ghaibah. Shaitan, Ghaibah. Rasulullah for a minor period, Ghaibah. Sign of Muttaqeen, Ghaibah. So all of this attack on the Mahdi, hold on, we have so many people in Ghaibah, now you came about Imam al-Mahdi. Then someone says, okay, we agree with the Ghaibah, but someone 1,100 years old, you believe in him? 1,100? Again, how do we reply? Again, we reply to our good friend. We start with our good friend, Shaytan. How old is Shaytan now? Honestly, it's unbelievable. Your Mahdi is 1,100. Habibi, Shaytan has been there since Adam began. Since the story of Adam began in the heavens, Shaytan is there. So what? Allah can allow Shaytan to live that long, but Mahdi, you have a problem with 1,000 years? Again, further than that, Prophet Yunus alayhi salam, when he was in the belly of the whale, Allah said in the Quran, were it not for his tasbih, I would have made him stay there till the day they are raised. That means Nabi Yunus could have been in the belly of a whale, in the belly of a whale, imagine the conditions there, until the day they are raised. That's number two. Number three, Prophet Isa, how old is he now? Is it that hard to guess? He's around 2012, for example. 2012, you tell our fellow Muslims, Prophet Isa, how old? 2012. But your Mahdi, how can he be 1,000 old? How are you accepting 2012? Prophet Khadr, Prophet Idris, again, age, all of them. But do you know who is the greatest example of age for our brothers in Ahlul Sunnah? Dajjal. Why Dajjal? We have so many hadith about Dajjal, don't we? Rasulullah says, every prophet told his ummah about Dajjal. And I tell you about Dajjal, but I tell you something extra, that he is Al-A'war, the one eye. Yes? Ahlul Sunnah believe Dajjal is a human. We believe he's a system. We don't believe there's literally a human with one eye. We believe it's a system which opposes religion. Ahlul Sunnah believe, no, it is a human. And if you read the books of Ahlul Sunnah, that person's been living since the time of Rasulullah, locked on an island in chains. Go and do your research tonight. Dajjal in the belief of Ahlul Sunnah. That Rasulullah was told about Dajjal. He went with Umar ibn al-Khattab to visit Dajjal. When he went, Umar said, who is this? The reply was, the person said, I am God. Umar wanted to strike him. Rasulullah said, stop. This person is the imposter. He is the Dajjal. He will live in an area of Isfahan and he will be raised when the Mahdi arises. Hold on. So from the time of Rasulullah, Dajjal has been living. Tamim al-Dari narrates, we were on a ship. We went past an island. We saw someone with chains around his hands. We asked, who is this person? We were told, this is Dajjal. So from the time of Rasulullah, Dajjal has been living. That means, in the belief of Ahlul Sunnah, Dajjal is older than Imam al-Mahdi. So how can I be ridiculous in my belief about Imam al-Mahdi when you believe in a Dajjal who's older than Imam al-Mahdi? In other words, those who come and say age, again, there are prime examples. Then an ultimate question, what is the benefit of the Imam in this occultation? As in, which benefit do we gain from the occultation of the Imam? We reply by saying the benefits are numerous. The first benefit of the occultation, Imam will never pledge allegiance to a tyrant. There are many tyrannical governments, but our 12th Imam will never have pledged allegiance to a tyrant. Secondly, what was the need of a ghaiba? That of course they were going to kill the Imam. Thirdly, the ghaiba is of course a test for us as followers of the Imam. How good a relationship do we have with the Imam? An Imam who we can't see, but we believe in his return. How many of us every day talk about Imam al-Mahdi? How many of us talk about Dua Nudba, or Dua Ahad, or Dua Tawassul? How many of us have this closeness with the Imam where we discuss the signs of the Imam and the return of the Imam? Some people turned around and said, what benefit do you gain from an Imam who you can't see, O Shia? What benefit do you gain from an Imam who you can't visualize? Because today people ask, what's the point of Imam Mahdi? I can't see him. We reply by saying the following principles. Do we believe in an existent who you can't see but whispers bad into you? Do we believe in such an existent or no? What do we call him? Shaytan, isn't it? Shaytan exists, cannot be seen, whispers bad. Taken by that logic, then can there be an existent who exists, cannot be seen, but whispers good into you? How many of you have had a thought in one day in your life or another and you're wondering, where did I get this thought from? Where did I get this idea from? Where did I go and open this moment, this business from? Where did that rizq come to me from? That is when a person truly has that relationship with the Imam. In the same way the Quran says about shaytan, you waswisu fi sudur an-nas, shaytan whispers into the hearts of men. If shaytan is living, cannot be seen, and whispers bad into the hearts of men, then why can't al-Mahdi, living, cannot be seen, whisper good into the heart of men? And that's why you find that many have benefited from the existence of the Imam, even though they had not seen him. So many of the greatest of the scholars had seen the Imam. So many of the most pious of the community had seen the Imam. Do not just imagine that you have to be a speaker or a scholar or a religious figure to meet the Imam. No. Anyone with sincerity can meet the Imam. Anyone who seeks to be close to the Imam. The Imam in his final letter said, if my Shia wanted me to return, I would return for them. Those who want the Imam to return, the Imam would return for them. The Imam also says what? When they said to him, Imam al-Mahdi is in ghaiba, we cannot see him. He says, no. He says, his ghaiba is like that of Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam. He exists, but his brothers couldn't recognize him. You ask Allah constantly, Ya Allah, allow us to recognize the Imam of our time. Allow us to be of those who defend the Imam of our time. Isn't it sad that we have so much knowledge on trivial matters and don't have knowledge of the Imam of our time? When a person dedicates their life to building a relationship with the Imam, there is no way the Imam would not help them. That's why may Allah bless the soul of Allama al-Hilli. Allama al-Hilli, how much he dedicated to the religion of Islam. How many books he wrote for the religion of Islam. How much sadaqah jariyah he gave towards the religion of Islam until today. And how much he taught people about his Imam, encouraged people to learn about his Imam. You think Allah would not allow Allama al-Hilli to meet the Imam of his time? Allama al-Hilli wanted to visit Masjid al-Sahla in Kufa. May Allah grant you all the ziyarah of Masjid al-Sahla. They say the person who visits Masjid al-Sahla 40 Tuesdays in a row will meet the Imam of his time on that 40th Tuesday. Some say just 40 Tuesdays? Watch, you could get to number 39, then you have an accident. Or on number 31, you have an illness. Or on number 26, you have an emergency. Do not think 40 Tuesdays to Masjid al-Sahla is easy. There may be an obstacle that will come up. Allama al-Hilli narrates, he says, I was now on my 40th visit to Masjid al-Sahla. It was a Tuesday night. And with me on my way to Masjid al-Sahla, I wanted to see if I met the Imam, I wanted to ask him a question. They said to Allama al-Halli, what's the question? He said, there's a hadith from Imam al-Baqir which I cannot understand until today. They said to him, what's the hadith? He said, the hadith of Imam al-Baqir says, whoever cries a tear the size of the wing of a fly for Imam al-Hussein, Allah will cure his sins even if they were the size of an ocean. The tear the size of a wing of a fly for Imam al-Hussein, Allah would cure sins the size of an ocean. Allama al-Halli says, I couldn't understand that hadith. How does that hadith mean that all the sins will be cured? Why would Allah forgive all the sins because a person shed a small tear for Hussein? So Allama al-Halli says, it was the 40th Tuesday and I set off towards Kufa, towards the place where the house of the Imam will be, where the government of the Imam will be. He said, as I got close to Masjid al-Sahla, an Arab man saw me. He said to me, excuse me, where are you going? He said, I'm going towards visiting Masjid al-Sahla. He said to him, why? He said, I want to visit Masjid al-Sahla, it's my 40th Tuesday, and I want to meet the Imam of my time, and I have a question I want him to answer for me. So the Arab man said to him, do you mind if I answer the question? He said, no, only my Imam can answer. The Arab man looked at him and he said to him, no, allow me to try. What's your question? He said, you know, I've always wondered, the tear the size of a wing of a fly for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, could it really cure sins the size of an ocean? He said, I've never understood this hadith of Imam al-Baqir. The Arab man looked at him, he said, can I explain the answer to you? Allama al-Halli said, well, go ahead, if you know, go ahead. He said, there was a king who went to war and his soldiers were with him. And midway through the journey, his soldiers were away from him and he was stuck in a forest alone. He didn't know where to go and he couldn't find any of his soldiers. So he went and knocked at the door. An old lady answered. She said to him, how can I help you? He said, I'm the king of this whole land. I cannot find my soldiers. I beg you, do you mind looking after me? And I promise when I return to my palace, I'll give you everything. The lady said, come in, stay with us. I live with my son, we live alone. And considering you're our guest, we only have one animal outside, but we'll slaughter it. That's all we have, but you are our guest and you deserve everything. That king, when he left their house having eaten, said, I swear when I return to my palace, I'll give you what you want. Months had gone past, nothing had been given. The narration says that her son said to her, or she said to her son, my son, why don't you go and visit the king and tell him who we are? The son was hesitant. He was like, he'll never remember us. He's now gone. She said, no, go and ask him. The son went towards the palace. Excuse me, who do you want? He said, I want to see the king. Why? There is something he owes us. The guards let him in. He came and saw the king. Oh, king, do you remember me? He said, no, I'm sorry, I don't remember you. Do you remember when you were lost in the forest? Me and my mother gave you our house and we slaughtered what we had for you. He said, of course I remember you. How can I forget? Please forgive me that I wasn't able to come back to you. It's been difficult times for us. Then he looked around at his two guards and he said, what do you think I should give him as a reward for what him and his mother done to me? They replied by saying, one of them said, give him some land. He deserves land. The other said, give him some treasures. Let him have treasures. He looked at both of them and he said, how unjust both of you are. This man, him and his mother gave me all that they had. Therefore, if I am going to be just, I have to give them everything that I have. The Arab man looked at Allama al-Halli and said, oh Allama al-Halli, if a normal king can be so just that he is willing to give everything away because a mother and her son sacrificed one animal, then do you not think the King of Kings would give all his forgiveness away for the man who gave everything he had on the 10th of Muharram? Allama al-Halli began to cry, for his tears remembered Karbala.
He remembered Hussein giving the baby away, and Hussein giving Akbar away, and Hussein giving Abbas away. That lady gave one animal and a king gave everything. Hussein gave his life. How could the King of Kings not give all his forgiveness to the man who gave everything away on the 10th of Muharram? A tear. Imam al-Baqir said a tear. The size of the wing of a fly for Aba Abdullah. Your sins the size of the ocean. How many of us are sinners tonight on a Thursday night, brothers and sisters? How many of us? How many of us, our tear for Aba Abdullah, for what he gave away? Then he looked at me and said, "Oh Allama al-Hilli, tell my Shia that if they visit me every Tuesday in Masjid al-Sahla, I will be there for them." As the poet says, "Oh Allama al-Hilli, tell my Shia not to forget me, I am with them. Tell my Shia that when I see their deeds, I cry sometimes. I expect more from my Shia, more from my followers." And that's why, without a doubt, Imam al-Baqir had that love for Imam al-Hussein. And that love that Imam al-Baqir had for Imam al-Hussein was transferred from his father, Imam Zain al-Abidin. Imam al-Baqir says, "I used to see my father when he walks past a butcher. As the butcher is about to sacrifice a sheep, I'd see the butcher give water to the sheep. And I'd see my father, Zain al-Abidin. He'd walk towards the butcher and he'd say to him, 'Oh butcher, the animals, before you slaughter them, do you give them water?'" He said, "Yes, of course, my Imam. Every creation deserves water before it is killed." He'd look at me and say, "My father died without anyone giving him any water." He says that I'd go with my father to the graveyard. He'd see a man being buried. He'd come to the man. He says to him, "Oh man, when I die, do you promise to bury me?" The graveyard would say to him, "Yes, we would bury you. How could we not?" He would look at them and say, "My dad laid on the ground for 3 nights with no one to bury his body." But arguably the saddest ever moment for Imam al-Baqir, Imam al-Baqir narrates, "Imam Zain al-Abidin, my father, when the poison surrounded his body, he was in extreme pain." May Allah never show you that moment when you see your father dying. Those of you who have seen your father die in this hall, how difficult are those last moments when you see him about to close his eyes? That father who you used to love, he's about to close his eyes. Imam al-Baqir said, "I saw Imam Zain al-Abidin, the poison surrounded his body. So what do I do as his son? I came to hug my father on his chest. I came and I hugged him. As soon as I hugged him, he began to cry in a way I have never ever seen him cry. I looked at him, I said, 'Oh my father Zain al-Abidin, why do you cry?' In a moment you'll see Rasulullah. In a moment you'll see Fatima al-Zahra. In a moment you'll see Imam Ali. In a moment you'll see Imam al-Hassan. In a moment you'll see Imam al-Hussein." He looked at me and he said to me, "Oh my son Muhammad, I cry because when I am dying, you are on my chest. Whereas when my father Aba Abdullah died, do you know who sat on the chest of my father?"
Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. We pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to raise us with Muhammad and al-Muhammad. Allow us to be amongst those who receive the intercession of Imam Sahib al-Asr al-Zaman. Allow us to understand the position of our Imam. Let us gain closeness to our Imam in this holy month of Ramadan. Ya Allah, allow us to be amongst those chosen to be the servants of Imam Sahib al-Asr al-Zaman. Allow us to avenge what happened in Karbala alongside Imam Sahib al-Asr al-Zaman. As we say in Dua Nudba, where is the one who avenges the one killed in Karbala? Ya Allah, let us be with him in avenging what happened at Karbala. As you know, Imam Sahib al-Asr al-Zaman in Ziyarat Nahiya says, "I cry for you tears that become blood when I remember Karbala." He cries tears that become blood. Imagine the level of passion. Those of you who shed tears, continue. Those of you who haven't, make a pledge to go and visit Aba Abdullah al-Hussein. Go and visit Karbala. If not, then at least go and visit Hajj
and be alongside Imam Sahib al-Asr wa al-Zaman at Arafah. Every year Imam al-Mahdi is in Arafah. Be amongst those Hujjaj next to him in Arafah this year, alongside him, be amongst him, be with him. We pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for all our brothers in the Islamic world, to unite them. Our brothers in Syria and Burma and India and Pakistan and Iraq. Ya Allah, our brothers in Bahrain and Saudi Arabia, our brothers especially in the areas of Gatif and these areas in Saudi Arabia who are being oppressed daily. Ya Allah, look after them, protect them. We pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala the Surah Al-Fatiha, but before it, the loudest of your salawat.